Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts Bob Dancer and Michael Shackelford. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's in the Video Poker Hall of Fame, and he has written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the Video Poker for Winners computer software. Michael Shackelford is the force behind the websites Wizard of Odds, Wizard of Vegas, and Wizard of Macau. An actuary by profession, Michael has been analyzing the whole gamut of casino games since 1995. His Wizard of Odds website explains the best strategies for 140 different casino games. Michael is also the author of Gambling 102, The Best Strategies for All Casino Games, and is a former adjunct professor of gaming math at UNLV. The goal of the show is that, by listening, you will be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Mike.
Good evening. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
I'm Mike Shackelford.
Our guest tonight is Elliot Jacobson. Elliot straddles the fence by offering advice to players on how to take advantage of casino inefficiencies, and on the same website offers advice to casinos on how to prevent players from taking advantage of these inefficiencies. Elliot is in studio, and we'll be talking to him shortly. Last week, our guest was gaming attorney Bob Nersessian. One of his answers to our questions brought in a bit of email. Specifically, we were talking about video poker programs on your smartphone, such as Wizard Poker, developed by Shaq, or Win Poker, developed by Dean Zamzow. Nersessian was very clear that, in his opinion, that it's a felony in Nevada to use one of those devices while playing video poker. Another way to say it is using one of those programs at the machine is out-and-out cheating, according to Nevada statutes, although most players would not consider it as such. Of course, a casino has to catch you doing it and decide they want to have you arrested for doing so. Casinos have not shown the propensity for doing this. However, if a casino does want to enforce the law literally and has you on surveillance camera using such a program, you're dead meat. The players most likely to be caught are the ones surveillance looks at the most, namely the ones who are playing high limits and the ones casino believes are advantage players, or the one the casino dislikes for some reason. If you fit into one or more of these categories, it's foolish to use such a product. Now, it isn't really the casino deciding whether or not to enforce this. It's the casino manager. And casino managers can change. So even if you've successfully done it for 2 years at the same casino, you still might have a problem someday. Now, if you're a big loser at a casino, probably you're safe. The casino sees you as a valuable asset. Even cheating you use, so a smart casino operator will allow you to continue to lose. You're too valuable to have arrested. Now, a video poker app on an iPad is much worse than the same app on an iPhone. Legally, they're equally felonious, but iPads are much easier for surveillance to notice. They're larger, less commonly seen in casinos, and less likely to be used for innocent purposes. In a related question, iPads can be used to display documents, like strategies. Is reading a strategy on an iPad illegal? My guess is no. But I'll put that question to Nersessian next week when he returns for a repeat visit. So, Shaq, it appears that you're selling an iPhone app that may be illegal to use in one of its intended fashions. Does that give you food for thought?
It gives me a little bit of food for thought. I continue to use WizPoker at the machines if I feel that nobody cares. I also am not convinced that it is a felony. I think that the law is vague, and let me read a little bit of it. Nevada Revised Statute 465.075 is titled Use or Possession of a Device to Obtain Advantage at Playing Game in Licensed Gaming Establishment. And Part 2 says, as used in this section, advantage means a benefit obtained by one or more participants in a game through information or knowledge that is not made available as part of the game as approved by the board or commission. And the way I see using something like WizPoker is I am just making use of information that is readily provided to me. I'm not doing something like tracking a roulette wheel or using shoes to count cards in blackjack. I am, you know, they freely offer this information to me. The casinos all the time say we have video poker that's over 99% and over 100%, and they are quoting figures based on optimal strategy. So I think that I am just getting use at information that, you know, that is the nature of the game.
Good luck on that argument. I actually don't think it's common knowledge whether you should hold a three-card straight flush or two royal cards in a particular game.
Neither do I, but I think that's because they are saying here's the pay table, here's the rules of the game, I think that if the player is smart enough to figure out the right play with or with however he does it, more power to him.
Well, that might be an argument that you encourage your lawyer to take when you get arrested for that.
And I'm not saying Narcissian is wrong, but I think that there is a good argument the other way.
Uh-huh. Well, tell it to the judge. Now, about 3 weeks ago, Jack, you got an email from the slot director at the Riviera, which led you and me both down a long and windy path. Why don't you tell us about that?
Yes, this is a long story. It all started when the slot director at the Riviera, as you mentioned, sent me an email saying that we pulled some game that had a progressive of about $72,000. And according to gaming law, this is like the player's money. They have to give it back to the players somehow. So they were going to have a drawing based on points earned in slots.
Or video poker. Right?
Yes, any kind of machine. And he wanted to notify me about this because he thought I might want to play it.
And he thought maybe we would advertise it for him.
Yes. He sent me an email saying, here is the schedule of payouts, and feel free to tell anyone about this you wish. And on the first two or three days of the earning period for this promotion, players would earn 5x points. And that's pretty generous, especially if you're talking about multiplying the points for purposes of their cash club, which would put it over 100% without even considering this promotion.
Not quite true. If you're a new player at the Riviera, the slot club is 0.125. And so 5x points makes it 0.625, which is their best game is 8.5 bonus dollars. So that's still under 100%. The higher tier players get 0.375, and so you multiply that by 5 and you get close to 2%. And that definitely adds, especially when you're talking about big games.
Right, and I was thinking that even if someone had no play there, they could play so much that they could earn the top status. And
but it's not retroactive. You still
earn. Right, but you could recoup the losses from earning your way to the top tier.
Okay.
Anyway, I thought this was just too good to be true, and I thought he meant only drawing entries would be multiplied by 5. So I went there on the last day of the earning period, on a Sunday, to play this. But first I was going to verify that it was true, because all I had was this email. And based on another promotion that they ran, I thought that they had a propensity to change their minds at the Riviera. So I show up.
Understatement.
Right. And I happened to see Bob there, and I asked him what he knew about it, and he said that he already inquired about it, and they told him that they did not know anything about this 5x policy. And so I asked to speak to the slot director. He could not be reached. So because the 5x rule could not be verified, I chose to just play it a little bit. Bob chose otherwise. He played it a lot. And so I left. A couple days later, the slot director wrote to me and made a comment like, you know, why don't you come back and play some more for the drawing? And I said, I don't plan to do that. I skipped a part. Somehow we found out. He wrote to me before and said, what did he say? That he said something to the effect that he wrote to me and said the 5x points was only for the drawing. So I was a little bit mad because why couldn't someone have verified that to me when I was actually there so I could have played a lot? So then he wrote back again and said, are you going to come, you know, invited me to come back and play? And I said, no, I'm not going to, because I know that Bob Dancer already stuffed the drum because he played a lot when it was still the five times earnings period. And then later he wrote back and said there was that they decided to invoke the rule that they reserve all rights and that they were not going to multiply any points by five.
That made me real happy, by the way.
That made Bob unhappy, but it did make me happy because now I was motivated to go back and play, which I did. And while I was playing, the three of us happened to be there at the same point, and Bob complained to the slot director about this change in the rules. And he said the rule was never actually changed. There was just a misunderstanding, and points were never multiplied by five to begin with.
Which did lead me to forgive Michael, but I was still upset at the slot director for misleading us on this. Now, my biggest problem I had with that promotion is on Friday night there were five hourly drawings between 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And each time they got four people got $250 each. Saturday were 10 drawings from noon to 9 where two people each time got $1,000, and Sunday there were drawings all day where the prizes were bigger, including the top several $5,000 prizes and the top one at $22,000. So it really mattered to be there on Sunday. Michael and I each won some of the time, under expectation, I suspect, but and we got shut out on the big prizes totally. I was fortunate enough to hit a royal, so I ended up okay. But several times during the week, I said, well, the rules don't say this. And they go, well, we reserve all rights, so don't pay much attention to what the rules say. This is the way we're going to do it. And that irritated me considerably. But I'm still going there. They now have a promotion where you can play. Instead of, if you have accumulated points, you do want to go there. They have a wheel spin at noon, 3 o'clock, 6 o'clock, or 9 o'clock, which is worth quite a bit more than your points are worth. So it costs you 500 points, which is either worth $250 in free play, $5 in free play, or $750 in free play, depending on what status you are. But those spins are worth, on average, or more than $15. So you only can do it 10 times a day. But if you have accumulated points at the Riviera, and that's a good way to use it, if you can be there conveniently during those time periods. Now, I place enough at the Palms and Gold Coast, which is relatively close to the Riviera, so I will plan my day so I can make a trip over there. And so I've done it like 16 times so far, made these trips just for these 10 spins. But it is worthwhile if you still have points.
I think the moral of the story is if you're going to do a promotion, create the rules carefully and thoughtfully, and then stick to them, please. I think all three of us in this room could help design an intelligent promotion of any kind. And I can't speak for Bob and Elliot, but I get so few requests to do that.
I've had requests, and I've... And sometimes they've even taken my advice, which is a different thing totally. All right, so that was the Riviera. Michael, why don't you tell us who Elliot Jacobson is?
Elliot Jacobson is a former teacher of computer science at UC Santa Barbara, my alma mater. He used to be an avid card counter. He used to run the website cardcounter.com. And wrote a book called The Blackjack Zone, which is an outstanding book on blackjack for beginning level players. Today, Elliot turns his attention more towards obscure advantage plays, which he writes about on his website, apheat.net. And he is full of information about things like edge sorting and hole carding and cutting-edge advantage plays. Elliot also enjoys, as a hobby in his free time, studying obscure martial arts. Elliot, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Thank you, Michael, and it's nice to see you both.
All right, Elliot. Michael mentioned apheat.net. Now, this is a website which will tell Advantage players about how to gain an edge on with hole carding in Mississippi Stud or edge sorting in various things or various type of things. And the same website, it tells the casino how to protect themselves against people who want to read your website. So this seems to be a schizophrenic website. So tell us about how did this website come to be and what is your...
So the website, actually, the germ of it was when I wrote an article for Mike's website on the Dragon side bet for Easy Baccarat. Uh-huh. And that article sort of went viral. It just got a tremendous number of hits, and casinos around the world, I'll just say, overreact a little bit. And that was sort of my first real play. I analyzed the Lucky Ladies way back in 2003, had written an article, but that was really my first one after that. And it sort of perked my interest towards the whole idea of looking in, doing the analysis for other sorts of bets. And so I wrote for Willie Allison's Catwalk in early 2011, a series of articles on a number of different opportunities. And then around May, I got a hold of Gross Jean's latest copy of Beyond Counting. And it was just full of all sorts of things. And it was very difficult to come by that information, that copy. And he never replied. Gross Jean never replied to my email, for example, when I wrote requesting a copy. And
he would be upset that you have one. But go ahead.
Whatever. So I just decided I wanted a venue to make this information public. There seemed to be a huge demand for the information in that book from all sides, from every corner. And I didn't think it would be fair to simply quote from his book. So I decided I would just verify or redo the games myself. And nothing against Gross Jean, but he doesn't actually write for the average guy very well. His audience, a pretty smart group of people who read his book. So I actually thought I would dumb it down a little bit, too, and sort of write more colloquially just for a general audience. So that's how AP Heat basically started. It was just the sort of motion that got set going after I wrote the article for Mike's side, and culminating with getting Beyond Counting in my hand and just saying I want to make that available. I want to put that out there.
But why do you want to put it out there?
So I have a long history with both sides, with playing both sides, and one of my first claims to fame was back in 1998 or 99 when I first started posting on BJ21.com. And I discovered a flaw shuffle at Chumash Casino. And I had demonstrated why the shuffle was flawed to the Chumash management. And even as I was a card counter, I was also helping or not so much working for the casino side, but volunteering information. I suppose the problem is I've always been somewhat zen about this. I really don't like the feeling that there are two sides. I just have an academic view towards information. Information is neither good nor bad or helpful or harmful to any side. It's just information. After that, it's how the person chooses to use it. But the information I put out there has essentially three groups of people who don't like the fact that I'm putting it out there. One are the game developers who have a financial interest in their game making it into casinos. And this hurts their sales potentially. The second are the companies that license their games for sale, who are actually the front line with the casinos, who now have to decide whether they want to divulge the fact that they know from the game developer. And the third are Advantage players. They don't much like that I'm making this information available because it was formerly obscure and hard to come by, and now everybody knows it, and maybe everybody's doing it and burning out opportunities, and it makes it a little bit more challenging for them as well. So essentially, Everywhere you look, this information has people who question why it's out there.
So you did this because you were too popular.
Oh, that must be it. And too many ladies are chasing me, Bob. That's
that must
right.
be it.
Well, forgive me, but how shall I put it? I still don't really get the thrust of the why. Is it the intellectual challenge of finding flaws in games? Or just for the love of truthful information?
Well, let me just pause for a moment about my background. I was a professor of mathematics doing research and publishing in journals for 15 years. Mm-hmm. And after that, I was adjunct professor and lecturer in computer science at UCSB. So I have 25 years in academia. And in academia, the whole point of research is to publish, is to make that information known. And the thrill of doing research is nothing more than the discovery of the fact. And so the academic's mind is, let me pick a type of information I'm just inherently curious about. Let me find out what's true about it, and let me publish it. And that is the thrill of academics. And that's who I am. Really, at my core, I'm still an academic, and that's how this information is being presented. I'm presenting as many things as I can that I know that are true about this information.
Well, I thought academics are selfishly motivated because it improves their odds of getting tenured if they have a lot of published articles.
So by that argument, once you have tenure, you cease publication. That would seem to be what you're saying.
Well, I think that some of them do, but I think that maybe if they're thinking of advancing to a better university, it might help.
So let's not digress into the...
Now, you recently on your site had a video on edge sorting. Now, tell us about the video and tell us what edge sorting is and how common is it?
So edge sorting is a technique of being able to identify cards, separate them into two separate groups by using subtle design flaws on the backs of the cards. And edge sorting simply requires that the player be able to identify that pattern in real time as the dealer's dealing, and also to be able to handle the cards and get them rotated. And then hopefully the cards wouldn't be a turn in the shuffle, so the cards would then stay in the sorted order and they'd be able to identify them. As far as frequency, it is not a frequent opportunity. I know of two instances. One, I know of an instance in Baccarat where there were some high rollers who came in from Asia and said, we have our obscure way of playing this game. We'd like you to deal the four cards face down before we make our bets. And after we make the bets, we would like you to turn certain cards. And then we have the certain way we want you to shuffle the cards. We don't want you to have a turn in the shuffle. And apparently they were sufficiently high rollers that they got away with this scheme and managed to hit a casino here in town for six figures, I believe. And the other one also happened here at a town. There was a casino I know of that was using some sortable cards and no turn in their shuffle, and they'd been getting hit for 3 months. And I have a brief note about that on my website. If you go digging around, I give that account of the edge sorting. So it does happen. It's not a common opportunity. But inherently, every deck of cards has a design flaw, and it's just a question of finding it.
How hard is it to find casinos that don't do the turn?
I don't find them very often in blackjack, but recently I found a casino that had a very safe blackjack shuffle, but I went to the proprietary game area, which often is a little bit sloppier, and their shuffles had no turn in them. So you may be able to find them in other games. I haven't done the research to know what other games are vulnerable outside of Baccarat and blackjack, but I'm sure many of the proprietary games are.
Now, here's something I was wondering is my favorite part of the video is when your dog comes into the room and just starts barking. And I know your dog, Rosie, and this is normally the most docile, quiet, friendly dog. And here she comes in the room and just starts barking. And I've never seen this dog bark before. So what got her so upset?
So Rosie has a little sister, and her little sister likes to bark at every little thing. And then Rosie has just learned from her little sister. So every time, there's sort of a chain of command. And so Rosie took orders from Daisy, and Daisy's about 12 pounds and barks at everything.
Okay, so the other dog is the bad influence.
Yes, just okay. Like you, Mike.
Uh-huh. Touché. Okay.
All right, now, one of the things you write about in this website is, well, hole carding in Mississippi Stud, and recently a variation where if on the last card, if the dealer flashes that, there's differences in strategy. How does that work?
So Mississippi Stud is a game that allows a player to wager three times his original amount on three separate streets. So starting with the one-unit bet, the player can get a tremendous amount of money in action. And the more cards you see, the greater your advantage. So as it turns out, in the game, if you don't see any cards, then you make your first wager with no information, your second wager with knowledge of two cards, your third wager with knowledge of three cards, and your fourth wager with knowledge of four cards. So if you see, for example, the flop card, which is the first hidden card, then your game is, instead of 0-2-3-4, is 0-3-3-4. And if you see the river card, then your game is 0-3-4-5. In other words, you have, you know, three cards for your first bet, four for your second, and five for your third. Five is all five cards. So this is how hole carding works quite often, this sort of scheme of 0-2-3-4, 0-3-4-5, that kind of language. And it describes how much information you have at each street. And then, essentially, the more information you have at each street, the greater your edge. So that's the difference between the river card and the flop card. It's simply the flop card is 0-3-3-4, and the river is 0-3-4-5. So the difference is like 50, I don't have the number right here, 50-something percent versus about 104% versus the difference between flop and river. It's almost, you have an edge over 100% over the house if you can see that river card.
I hear all this stuff about hole carding, and I don't know if it's my eyes are bad, but, you know, I go around looking for hole carding dealers, and I'm just not finding them anymore. When I first moved to Vegas, it was a lot more commonplace.
Well, some games got burnt out about 10 years ago and kind of it became a little bit more well-known. And, mm-hmm. and back in the three-card poker or one-card poker glory days, a lot of that was done. I have heard many accounts of Mississippi Stud being beaten quite handily. And on a couple of occasions, I've seen it, but not in Las Vegas. Recently, I read on beyondcounting.com a message thread that was lamenting the fact that hole card opportunities were getting harder to find. And the question was, are the casinos getting wiser, or are there just more APs out there burning these games out faster? And I actually think it's the second. The APs are educating the casinos mm-hmm. by finding these opportunities and burning them out.
Mm-hmm.
6 months ago, we had a guest on this show named Stephen Howe, who his website is discountgambling.com. .net, is it? All right. So he writes about these same games. Do you consult with him on these games? Do you check with what he's writing before you write to make sure you haven't? And if there's a difference, call them up and work it out. Who's right and who's wrong, or how does, or do you have a working relationship with Stephen?
Well, yeah, Stephen and I have spoken a number of times. The first time was when I wrote my article on the Dragon Bet and Easy Baccarat, and I just wanted confirmation because I knew, being the first article like that, it was going to be a big deal, and I wanted to make sure to get the right numbers on Mike's side. And there was a little issue with that right at first, and it got straightened out, and Stephen helped me with that. But yeah, we've spoken quite a bit. What I'm always looking for on my side are what games are actually getting played. And I'm looking for whatever resources I can find that says this game is out there, this is a new game, or this is an established game and it's getting played. And if I find those games, then I think about advantage play. Now, Stephen is, he works more on the dark side, namely the advantage player side. Or is that the casino side? No, he works more on the advantage plan. I just had to get that one in, Mike. And so he tends to bury in his website any truth about the vulnerabilities of these games in just sort of suggestive sentences. And to that extent, I will look at those and say, there might be something here, and let me flesh this out a little bit and see what's really going on there. But we've spoken quite a bit and checked our numbers. He's helped me check quite a few numbers.
So, Elliot, you often write about new games and side bets before anyone else does, and you recently wrote an article on Easy Six Baccarat. So what is the gist of that game, and how vulnerable is it to advantage play?
So there are a number of Baccarat side bets, and the question is to somehow rank these side bets and get a sense for their relative vulnerabilities. And the ones that are out there right now are the Dragon Bonus, which is the spread or the gap in the totals. There's these two bets, the Panda 8 and the Dragon for the Easy Bac. There's Lucky Pairs, which is another very common one. And then there's Easy 6. And I just read about Easy 6 on Stefan's site, and he had one suggestive sentence about it and recommended a counting system but didn't give any actual values. The bet itself is easy enough to understand. You're betting that either the dealer will have a winning sense, or I'm sorry, the banker will have a winning six, total of six, the player side will have a winning total of six, or the hand will result in a 6-6 tie. If any of those things happen, the payout is 6-1.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy enough to say, and then you, as an advantage player, the question is, why is this vulnerable? And clearly, if there are a lot of sixes in the deck, this is an outcome that could happen.
Because the other card could very likely be a face card.
Yeah, there's plenty of face cards around. Meanwhile, if there's lots of sevens, eights, and nines, then you're going to have lots of natural winners or winners with a total of seven, or final hands with a seven. So either of those, so sixes are good for the player, seven, eights, and nines are bad for the player. So there's a nice count. Seven, eight, and nine, you're happy when those leave the deck, plus one. Sixes, you're sad when those leave, minus three. Balance count. And when the count's positive, you get a good edge. The statistics I have are that you actually get an edge over 19% of the hands you play against this bet. Your average edge is going to be over 5.7%. And if you're betting $100 every time you have the edge, then you're winning almost $89 per shoe against this bet. This is the most vulnerable bet out of all the ones that I've investigated on my site. I'm not aware of a bet right now that's actually out there where you can bet on a natural and get paid for it as a side bet. Whenever those show up, they get burnt out pretty quickly. So occasionally you hear about those, but they don't last. But this sounds like one that might be around for a while. I don't know any domestic placements, but I've heard about some that are offshore.
Okay.
One of the stories you have on AP Net has to do with when you were personally backroomed. And apparently the question is, you used to be an AP yourself, but that backrooming experience was so traumatic that then you decided to work for the casinos. And now that's the... Now, is that a fair statement, or do you want to talk about that?
I think it's ludicrous. I mean, that's absolutely ludicrous. That would never, that logic never followed.
Okay.
In fact, at the time that incident happened, I was already working for Compton Dancer Consulting. Do you recognize that name?
I've heard of it.
Yeah, and I had been a consultant for them for well over a year. I had been doing some secret shopping for Ameristar Casinos in the Midwest, and I already started writing articles for them. So I actually, my exit from Advantage Play started in 2002. Well, you could say I was never much of an advantage player, to be honest. I was never very good. I never was that into it. But for me, it was always more theoretical than it was substantial. And Stanford Wong in 2002, I had a conversation with him, and he looked at me and he said, Elliot, you've already proven to yourself you can beat these games. You're really not interested in being an advantage player. You're in it for the theory. And I think he was right. I did play some after that date as well. Played as recently as 2009, but just casually. Sometimes if I just happen to be in a casino and I have to kill some time, I'll spread $5 to $30. And, you know, it doesn't make any money, but you have to view that as advantage play. The actual incident that happened was as bad as any that you hear about or read about, and the people responsible definitely deserved what they got. It was a very bad situation, and I do write the full account. Last time I was on the show, I was reserved about saying what actually happened when you asked. And I spoke to two lawyers since then, and they essentially said it was okay to write the account out. So the account that's on my website, after this happened, I went to a Kinko's at 8 a.m. the next morning and just did a mind dump and wrote everything I remembered exactly as I remembered it. And what I posted on my website was that account, word for word. I didn't change a thing.
You did take out the name of the casino.
I did. Yes. Okay. I changed one thing. All right. I do have, of course, a non-disclosure as part of the settlement.
So you can't say how much or if any and which casino was.
Yes. If there was any, it was worthwhile. It was nice. But I had to declare it in my taxes.
Okay. Are the two lawyers you're consulting?
If I did declare it.
Wouldn't happen to be Nersessian and Sankowitz, would they?
Yes.
All right, so.
Yes, they are. Absolutely.
All right, good. You had a good lawyer on that. You had two good lawyers on that.
Okay, another topic. I get asked all the time if Baccarat is countable, and I've been saying for years that the most vulnerable bets in Baccarat are the player and banker ties, which many tables have. I've done some of my own analysis of it and basically found it to just not be worth the time. However, now on your website, you declare a very clever technique for counting these bets that I never thought of. So can you tell us more about how to beat the pair bets in Baccarat?
So sometimes it's called a lucky pair. It's just you're betting on either the banker or the dealer side to get a pair, and it pays 11 to 1. So what happened was
as
that
in a pair of twos or a pair of threes, is that, or you mean a tie between them?
No, just a pair. The two cards are a matching pair for the banker's side, a pair of deuces, a pair of sevens, whatever. I got contacted by a casino that said, we think we're getting beat pretty bad by some people playing against the pairs bet. And they said, we've been tracking these players, and look, on this sheet, they only made the bet after three of the ranks were completely depleted. And we went to the Wizard of Odds, and on that site it talks about a way you can beat this bet, namely you only make the bet after three ranks have been depleted. And so they viewed that as the advantage play. And so that kind of perked my interest in actually finding out what the advantage play might be there. It's really a pretty simple idea. The more ragged the distribution of the various ranks, the more the edge favors the player. And because you're allowed to actually have a scorecard when you're playing Baccarat, you can keep track of exactly how many cards are left of each rank. And so what I did was to develop a method that could only be used when there are 60 or fewer cards left in the shoe, which is most of the time what you would do anyway, is towards the end of the shoe. And it quantifies exactly what it means to have a ragged distribution of the ranks. For each number of cards that are left in a given rank, I assign what I call a weight. So if there are zero or one cards left, the weight is zero. If there are two left, the weight is one, and so on. I give weights on up to if there's 12 cards left in a given rank. And so the advantaged player would just have to remember these 12 numbers or 13 numbers, these weights for the various numbers of cards. And then you add these up, and if their sum is sufficiently large, I call that the target, then you have the edge. So I call this the weights and targets method for beating the bet. You assign a weight to each rank, the number of cards left in that rank, add them together, and see if it exceeds the target or not. And it's about as tough as learning basic strategy in blackjack. It would take some work, but it's definitely an effective and almost nearly perfect way of playing against the bet.
Good stuff.
So you have to stick around. So this is you're starting with six shoes, which is 300.
Well, yeah, eight shoes is more typical. Yeah, so it takes a while, but you can have people at various tables keeping score, and they can call a player to a table because you don't deplete cards in baccarat the way you do in blackjack. So you can call people to the table from a team to each make wagers so you can get as much money down on the bet as possible.
Do you have any sense for how little you can bet in baccarat to the point where the casino won't get annoyed and saying, look, you're only betting one hand out of every 50. You know, you're wasting the seat.
Yeah, I'm just a theory guy here. I don't know. Maybe you know that, Mike. I don't know.
Yeah, I've always wondered
you
that.
Definitely
I don't know
can
either.
Sit out hands. You definitely can sit out
oh,
hands.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, people do all the time. But I think, you know, at some point the casino probably draws a line.
So you're betting whatever the table minimum is, as least as you can. And then when it's favorable, you're betting the maximum allowed on the side bet.
On the side bet. And, mm-hmm. and at some places, especially in Asia, the side bets allow from $500 to $1,000 per spot. The high limit action in Macau, for example, allows extraordinary wagers on these side bets, which can lead to great opportunities for players.
Is it safe to be an AP in Asia?
I don't know. I actually have no idea, but I know that people do it.
All right.
I know it's definitely not safe to cheat in Asia. If you're caught cheating, there's some videos, if you go looking on YouTube, where essentially you have to demonstrate the cheating device. And some of those videos have been made public to sort of discourage other people from cheating. And it is a little bit troubling just to see the actual situation, the actual dynamic when the person's been caught. So it's interesting stuff.
Now, if somebody has a game that they think they would like to have analyzed, do you take requests? And if so, how does somebody get a hold of you?
Well, I do take requests, and I have just a link on apheat.net that says game submission. And the only requirement is that there's two requirements. One is that it's not a blackjack variant. I don't want to analyze yet another card counting system for a blackjack variant. It's just I'm just not interested in that. The other is that the game has to be placed in at least one casino. So it can't just be some game some guy's thought of or heard of. It has to actually exist and be played.
Well, for your consulting services, what do you like to do? And don't be shy about promoting yourself a little bit.
Well, I work as a gaming mathematician on slots and video poker and table games, and I also do on-site analysis for yield management issues and marketing problems. I've helped design the formulas that are used to generate theoretical and monitor sort of the interface between gaming and marketing. And, of course, I've done some AP work where I have suggested ways that casinos can sort of close some vulnerabilities. I also do public speaking. I've spoken around the world. Recently I was in Cambodia as a speaker, and that was a great thrill. So I don't know. I do whatever people want. I try and do just about anything someone throws my way. I've really enjoyed being a consultant and just sort of always trying something new.
Very good. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
So, Michael, what did we learn tonight?
To be honest, I think I knew all of that stuff already. But
so this show was a waste of time for you, Michael.
Well, you know, Elliot's site is outstanding, and I check it on a regular basis, along with discountgambling.net. So
yeah,
that's why it's not that the stuff was common knowledge, but it's just for out of my great respect for Elliot and his site.
Yeah, and actually on your site, Michael deals a lot more with table games. My specialty is video poker, of course, and I like had no idea about the various side bets in Baccarat. I knew they existed, I knew counting systems existed, but had not gotten into them. My eyes are not such that I could possibly hold card anymore, but the stuff is interesting, and I'm glad to learn about it, and I'm glad to have you back. On the South Point has more than 10,000 video poker games, returning more than 99%. That's more than anyone else. From December 1st through 24th, the South Point will charge you 50% if you use accumulated slot club points for things like rooms, meals, gift shop, liquor store, bowling, show tickets, etc. This is a regular December promotion at the casino. Smart players save their points all year long and redeem them at this time. Unfortunately, they do not give you double free play. That would be what I would redeem my points for, should I be allowed. December 17th offers double points. This extra day is because normally this is a dead time of the year. On Christmas Day, December 25th, there will be double points on video poker, midnight to midnight. Some people have strong opinions on the true meaning of Christmas. For me, the true meaning is double points all day long. At the Palms, every Friday and Saturday in November at 7 p.m. from now and through December 27th, they have a $70,000 Greedy Grinch money bag drawing. Based on your play, the first five players pick a money bag. Inside, the prizes range from $350 to $3,500 with an average of a little more than $900. Five other players win iPad minis, an Apple gift card, or $100 in cash. You earn double drawing tickets on Sundays and Tuesdays. The Play, Earn, and Win PEW gifts on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday are gift cards at a rate of 0.20%. This is almost double points, the Palms. Actually, it's 1.8 times points because the normal exchange rate at the Palms is 0.25%. So the first $150 per day, Monday, Wednesday, Friday, of video poker earns you $300 in Visa cards. In addition to the $375 in free play you normally get for that same play. Slot players earn the gift cards at a rate of 2%. That means it takes $15,000 coin in on slots to earn you the same $300 Visa gift cards. And except in special circumstances, the hold on slots is much, much higher than 2%, so you're better off playing them at video poker. Becoming a member of videopoker.com makes a lot of sense. You get to play a lot of games for free to see what they're like before you actually play them in the casino. The gold membership, for which there's a small monthly fee, allows you to play more games, and on many of them, it gives you a red light, green light indicator as to whether or not you played the hand correctly. On some games, there's no publicly available software other than the videopoker.com. QuickQuads is one of these. This gives you accurate information for any pay schedule in QuickQuads as to whether or not you're making the right play or not. If you play that game, it is well worth the monthly fee. Our guest next week is Bob Nersessian as a return visit. We're going to go back and ask him again about this this device law that Michael thinks he has a good defense for, and I personally think Michael's defense is a bunch of hooey. That's a technical term, but we'll ask Bob again about that next week. Now, Michael, last week you told us you were going to be running a half marathon. Did you survive?
I did indeed. My time was 1 hour, 59 minutes, and 20 seconds.
That would be an excellent time for a marathon.
It would be a world record time, I think. I don't think anyone's ever broken a two-hour marathon, have they?
No, about 2:08 or something, 2:07.
Yeah, so, I was only hoping to beat 2 hours, and it was tough. Fortunately, there was a big group of people trying to keep up a two-hour pace right in front of me. So when it got to the very end, I did my best to pass them. So had it not been for them, I probably wouldn't have done it. But the previous year, my time was 1 hour and 49 minutes. I was a little bit lazy this year with my training, so that's why I slacked off by 10 minutes. But I'm still proud of myself.
That's good.
I think it was a success.
I think so, too. Now, in Las Vegas, we're now undergoing our 10 days at National Finals Rodeo, which comes here every year at this time. Now, for the city, this is real good, especially if you like country western music. You'll see a lot of cowboy hats around, especially in the locals' places. Now, when the rodeo ends on December 15th, between then and Christmas, this is a really dead time in Las Vegas. Some of the restaurants close. Many of the shows go dark. However, casinos make all kinds of great offers to lure players in there. Now, the South Point's Double Points on Monday the 17th is an example of this. So if you come to Vegas for gambling purposes, this is a really great time to come between the 10 days before Christmas. If you come to see shows and for restaurant stuff, this isn't such a good time. So it depends on why you come to Vegas. But historically, December has been my most profitable month, primarily because casinos are doing everything they can to
incentivize you.
Yeah. All right. Now, Jeff Hall is going to be a guest in a couple weeks. Now, remind our audience who Jeff Hall is, Michael.
Jeff Hall is the inventor of Blackjack Switch, as well as Freebet Blackjack. And he's also an advantage player. He's very knowledgeable about all things gambling. He's been on the show before, and we're happy to have him back. And we're going to talk about the latest advantage plays that he's doing and how his Freebet Blackjack is doing, and maybe about the gambling scene in the United Kingdom.
All right. So we have 2 minutes left. Now, Elliot, you were in town this week for a raving Cutting Edge Table Games conference. Now, tell us about that.
So this conference has a theme of table games, and it draws director of table games, vice presidents of table games, and all sorts of other people with the word table games in casino management from around the country, and there are even some people from overseas, and they come for 2 days of talks and sessions and just to meet and network with each other. But they also get the opportunity to see, I think there are about 25 brand new games on display in the exhibition hall this year, so they get to try these games. And there was a competition for best game, and the winner of that competition got 7 free trial placements in some of the in a variety of casinos. So it was quite an event, and I think it'll take place again next year. It's a very exciting event to go to if you're interested in table games.
So you must walk around the floor and just see all kinds of flaws in these games.
Well, it's some people don't like me to sit down at their games. They say, oh, no, don't look at my game. But no, actually, people are very open to it, and I think that's one of the reasons that I do this work, is I want to try and help the industry understand about sort of growing up and meeting its own challenges.
By the way, kudos to the game High Card Flush, which won the prize for the best table game at the show.
Was your game Mulligan Poker there?
No, it was not. Shuffle Master did not attend.
And High Card Flush, as far as I can tell, doesn't have an advantage play issue either.
Well, then let's talk about a good game, one that does have an advantage play. All right, so we got 10 seconds. Everybody hit lots and royal flushes. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everyone. Good night.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Michael Shackelford. Archived versions of past shows may be found on bobdancer.com and wizardofodds.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Michael Shackelford are both on Facebook and welcome your input or questions. Our sponsors are the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa, the Palms Casino Resort, the website videopoker.com and the website wizardofodds.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge.